Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
For the first time in 32 years, the Los Angeles Dodgers are World Series champions. Welcome in to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, joined by Travis Anderson in the studio. And Travis, last night, the baseball season came to an end, and it was the Dodgers, the team that was best throughout the regular season, ended up being best in the postseason. Pretty historical run when you think about it.
Yeah, they've been the best team. You know, you probably make the case maybe the last 3 years they've been the best team, just ran into some bad luck with Houston, the Red Sox, and then last year, and then finally got it done this year. I mean, they were the best team all year. They only lost one series all year. That was to Colorado.
Right.
And then Atlanta had them on the ropes, but that's what good teams do. They find ways to, you know, fight back and win. That's what they did, and they deserved it. I mean, this has been a long time coming for Dodger fans. I mean, you know more than anybody, and they finally got it done, and you just got to be happy for, you know, you and your dad and my brother and every Dodger fan out there in the Dodgers organization.
Yeah, when you look at the players on this Dodger team, Clayton Kershaw, you got to be happy for him. He picks up two wins.
Greatest pitcher of our generation.
Yeah, look, Dodger fans, they know he's the greatest pitcher in franchise history. I think the only thing that was preventing Dodger fans from just flat out saying that was postseason struggles, no World Series championship.
I mean, it's not like he's been bad. He's 16-5 or so in the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, the guy's a stud, and people, you know, like to harp on it, and he's not had bad outings. But yeah, he finally got that, so people can, you know, be quiet about that now.
Justin Turner, been there for a long time. This is a guy that the Mets didn't want. Nobody wanted Justin Turner, you know. So you look at guys like Pedro Baez and Kenley Jansen. These are longtime Dodgers that have stuck it out.
Yeah, Kenley's a foundation guy.
He is a foundation guy. I mean, he may be towards the end now, but nonetheless, you have to be happy for this team. And look, the missing ingredient proved to be Mookie Betts.
Guy reminds me so much of Ricky Henderson.
Yeah, Ricky Henderson on steroids.
Yeah, I mean, Mookie Betts is a stud. I mean,
he flies when he's on the base paths. Here's the thing. Mookie does everything great.
Defensively, he's awesome. Hitting, getting on base. I mean, the Red Sox messed that up so badly, and, you know, that was the missing ingredient for the Dodgers.
Eighth inning last night, Mookie goes yard. Game's 2-1. Mookie hits a solo shot, and at that particular time, it just felt real. They're going to finally do it. The Mookie shot wasn't the go-ahead home run. You know, he had the go-ahead run at home plate, but the Mookie shot, you just got the sense, okay, this game's over.
Yeah, and I never felt like the Dodgers were going to lose last night. You text me, what do you think? I was like, they're fine. They're going to win. And I know it kind of looked bleak there, but I was never worried when they were down 3-1 to Atlanta, and I wasn't worried in this series, and I wasn't worried last night. They were going to get it done because they're the better team, and the better team's going to win.
I agree. I agree with that, okay? But when you look at the game last night, for one, I never thought the game was going to end 1-0. It wasn't going to end 1-0. One run was not going to be enough for Tampa. However, Kevin Cash makes a decision to pull Blake Snell after 5 1/3 scoreless innings and two hit baseball up 1-0.
70 pitches.
I don't know what Kevin Cash was doing last night. He said, quote, well, yeah, I regret the decision because it didn't work out. No, it wasn't. It wasn't smart. I mean, let's just be real. It was not smart. Look, if you're a Dodger fan, you're excited because finally there's a pitching gaffe that you cannot relate to your manager, Dave Roberts. But Travis, the wheels fell off after Kevin Cash decided to pull Blake Snell, arguably the best pitcher on the team. And he was throwing his best game, not of the series, but of the season.
Because he struggled a little bit.
World, yeah. What in the world is Kevin Cash thinking?
He wasn't. He relied so much on analytics and not his gut. And as a manager, you can overthink things. And Dave Roberts did the same thing a few years ago. You can overthink the situation and think, well, I got to get my guy out of there because we're getting to the lineup rolling over again for the third time, and I don't want him to go through it. But, yeah, that's one he messed up on. And if he looks back on it and could do have a do-over, he wouldn't do that.
Yeah, none of it made sense.
No.
None of it made sense. I mean, you leave him in to face Mookie, or you bring in another lefty for Mookie, right?
That's but what that you bullpen do. Was gassed. Tampa's bullpen was gassed.
That's fair,
that's
too.
Why you can't.
That's fair, too.
And, you know, you got to... Snell has to go at least seven innings, and or eight innings, but I think Tampa Bay's bullpen was gassed, dude.
Snell was not happy when he was removed from the game.
Yeah, he should have been mad.
And one of the things that I do believe we now can look at is you talk about the bullpen being gassed. I think it is important to look at Tampa Bay's route to the World Series. So they get by Toronto easy. That was very simple. We knew that was going to happen. But it's a 5-game set with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 7-game set with the Astros. It's a 6-game set with the Dodgers. When you look at the Dodgers' route, it was a sweep over the Brewers. It was a sweep over the Padres. And it went 7 with Atlanta, and the Dodgers had to throw everything in the kitchen sink to get to the World Series. But I do believe that Tampa had a more difficult route to the World Series. The Dodgers cruised through the first two rounds. That wasn't the case for Tampa. And when you play in such a short period of time, and there's no travel days, and we had, what, 2 travel days in the World Series, but when you're playing that much baseball, you have to worry about the bullpen arms. And I agree with you. Tampa's bullpen was gassed.
Yeah, and for the Dodgers, they got what they needed out of Gosselin to start the game. Only gave up the 1 run. You survived that. Alex Wood comes in, does a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And you can't say enough about the other guys that, you know, pitched last night, including the kid that closed it out.
Now, I guess the one thing that you can say in defense of Kevin Cash is Blake Snell has now gone a major league longest 21 straight starts without completing 6 innings. That includes every outing this season, okay? So while it appears, and I agree, it was asinine to take him out last night. It was, and that's a decision that we're going to hear about. It's going to be up there with Grady Little. It's going to be up there with Dave Roberts pulling Rich Hill. You name it. I mean, it's going to be mentioned with the pitching gaps. When you look at what Tampa did all season long, it fit with what got them there. Snell never went longer than 6 innings. Never completed 6 innings.
Well, and that's the style they went with, and they didn't change it because they're in Game 6 of the World Series. They kept with what got them to that point, and it didn't work out. Finally, it something went the Dodgers' way, you know, with a managerial decision.
Dodgers are World Series champions, and you better believe we're going to talk about this a little bit later on in the show. We're also going to talk some high school basketball coming up in just a few weeks. We're going to tip off the winter sports season. Emory's got a new general, a new head coach, Jeff Cincinnatus. He's going to join us in studio on the show today. We will catch up with a great friend of mine, Steve Bordstein. Look, I try to stay completely unbiased. I can't help it. I'm ecstatic today. The Dodgers are World Series champions. We will talk some Major League Baseball a little bit later on in the show. And we'll continue to just recap what was a crazy season all the way through and through. That's coming up when we return right here on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
The fall sports season is rapidly coming to a close. Right now we have volleyball going on at Sevier Valley Center, and when that comes to an end, we're done in the Castle Country with fall sports, and we'll shift our focus to winter. Now things will be a little bit different at Emory High School for the first time in about 35 years. There's going to be a new head coach for the Emory Spartan boys basketball team. He's going to join us right now to talk about the new era of Emory basketball. We have head coach Jeff Cincinnatus in studio. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Good to get in, Jordan. Thanks.
Absolutely. As we wrap up the fall sports season, I know we still have volleyball, but outside of that, it's all pretty much done, which means we hit a moratorium, and then before you know it, we're starting basketball, and your first game on the bench for Emory, that'll be November 18th at home against American Leadership Academy. That'll be here before we know it.
Yeah, it's right around the corner. Like you said, fall sports are wrapping up. I mean, it seems like this fall season really flew by at the high schools, especially with everything going on with the, you know, the virus and everything. It's just been kind of an up and down roller coaster ride for these kids so far. But basketball season's here. We're in our 2-week moratorium prior to tryouts, which are November 9th. So we have no contact as coaches with our kids right now until tryouts start on that Monday. So, but and then we jump into the fire. You know, we have basically a week and we're playing games, and I'm excited for it. And I think the kids are excited, and hopefully, you know, everything with the virus continues to work in our favor that we're able to have a basketball season. I know there's at any given time they could pull that out from underneath us, and I hope that doesn't happen for these kids' sake. And, you know, we'll just keep moving forward day by day.
Yeah, Coach, now that you are, I mean, you've officially had an off season, and it's kind of odd to be in the spot because Coach Jeffs was here for 30 plus years, but now you're trying to make the program your own, and just going over the schedule, I mean, there's some little quirks that you added into it, but a very competitive schedule that you put together. You reach the max of 20 games, and as I go over it, I don't see a game that I look at on the schedule and say, "Nah, that's a guaranteed win." I mean, it's a competitive schedule.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody knows me and from my past, and I know Coach Jeffs was the same way. You know, I want to schedule the best. Yeah. If you're going to be the best, you play the best. You got to beat the best. So I have no problem stepping out of our classification and playing higher classification teams, or scheduling, you know, who you think is the best team in your classification during the season. You know, which is what I've tried to do with the couple games that I was able to schedule. Coach Jeff's pretty much had the schedule put together. I needed to add 3 or 4 games, which I did. And, you know, I'm pretty happy with the schedule. You know, you'll see me in the future maybe jump out of our classification a little bit in the preseason and play some bigger schools if given the opportunity, a little more so than you're seeing this year. But I'm excited about our schedule. Like you say, we open up at home with American Leadership Academy, which from year to year, you just don't know what kind of team they're ever going to have. You know, some of these private schools, you know, Layton Christian Academy, American Heritage, they're on our preseason schedule. You just don't ever know from year to year what kind of teams those guys are going to put on the floor. They can be super competitive for, you know, competing for a state title or not have a great team. But for us, it's about getting on the floor. It's about a lot of guys getting a lot of time. We don't have a lot of players who've seen a lot of varsity time last year. So they're going to be really green when it comes to stepping on the varsity floor. And I think you're going to see a lot more players maybe from, you know, the past of a typical Emory team that are going to step on the floor and play for us at the varsity level with as good a freshman class as we have and some quality sophomores and juniors and then a good senior class. So I expect everybody to contribute for us to be successful this year.
As far as the RPI is concerned, I mean, obviously you always want to step up. I mean, you're going to get points for doing that. And we saw the RPI. It's worked out pretty well over the last couple of seasons. You've got to play around with it being a baseball coach at Corbin. Have you noticed a certain level of success as far as scheduling for the RPI? Because I almost feel like there's an art to it.
There is, and it depends on what kind of program you're running. With us, with baseball at Corbin, we're, you know, I think every year we're right there competing at the top of our classification. It's a little bit easier for me to have higher classification teams who will schedule us because, you know, playing a team like Corbin in baseball or Emory in basketball, you're going to get a lot of points in your RPI even if you're a higher classification team. You can earn more points playing down a level, playing a team like ours, than playing, you know, a team in your own classification who's not as good. And so, you know, there's still some things I think that need to be torqued with the RPI system. You know, for me, baseball is a tough one because the first game of the season counts against your RPI, and I don't think statewide in the spring we're all on the same playing field. You know, some programs haven't been outside for their first game. Some have been outside, if you're down in St. George, you know, all year round. And so for us to step on the field and play some teams who have been outside, you know, during the preseason and we haven't, I don't think that's really fair for those games to right off the bat count. I think baseball, softball, some of those spring sports, I think, should be looked at a little different because you're just not all on an even playing field when the season starts. But, you know, basketball, volleyball, you know, sports like that, I mean, everybody's in a gym. And so I think everybody has the same opportunity preseason as they do when season starts to be ready to go. But, you know, the RPI's been around. This is the second year. You know, we really didn't get a full season of it in baseball, so I'm not sure how it's really going to affect us with baseball season. Basketball seemed to work out really well last year. You know, I think Emory finished 2 in the RPI when the season was over, and if you look at, you know, where they were come state, you know, tournament time. I think they were seated right. I think that's where they belonged, and Manti where they belonged, and teams like that. So I think it all worked out to where it was supposed to be. And volleyball this year looks like it's playing out where the top, you know, top four or five teams are ranked right where they should be in the RPI. And I think that's how the state tournament will play out when it comes that way. So I'm a big fan of the RPI. I think there's some things we can do to make it better, obviously, like any other program. But I think it's a system put in place to have the best teams playing each other on the last day of a state tournament because they should be on the opposite sides of the bracket. And so far, that's kind of the way it's played out.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Jeff Cincinnatus as we talk about the Emory High School basketball season, which again will begin on November 18th, the home game against American Leadership Academy. Coach, you've reached the moratorium, so let's talk about the past offseason. You guys had several opportunities to kind of get outside of the area, go play against some opposing squads, some teams that we are familiar with, which, I mean, it's a great thing considering everything that we went through over the last 6-7 months with COVID. All in all, was it as normal as an offseason as could be expected? I mean, did it work out maybe even a little bit better than you had anticipated?
I think so. I think to start with, when I took the job, you know, back in February or March or whatever month it was there, it was a little tough at that point in time because I couldn't go over, meet with the kids at Emory, introduce myself, get to really know them because we were right in, you know, with the COVID started, and I mean, everything was just really put on hold. We did get a chance to go to summer camp starting in June, which was very limited number of camps, you know, but we were able to get to a couple, which was, you know, awesome for us. And for me to learn these kids and what they're capable and them to get an idea of, you know, who I am as a coach and what I expect out of them, I think it was about as normal as could possibly be when you look at any other summer, other than we didn't maybe get to go to, you know, another camp or two. We only got to go to a couple where normally you'd like to go to at least three or four. But I think the opportunity we did get gave us a great chance to figure some stuff out. We've been doing open gym now for, you know, at least a month, going over, you know, a night or two a week and again, trying to put some stuff in place, some new stuff and some expectations of what I expect from them. And I think it's been about as normal as, you know, an off season could be with everything that was going on this year. Again, it's just a matter of how normal of a season are we really going to have. You know, I mean, the restrictions of having to wear a mask when you're coaching and doing things like that are obviously going to be a little bit more difficult to deal with. But, I mean, you know, it's something that shouldn't take away from the game at all, and we should be able to work with it. So I'm excited for it. I know the kids are excited. You know, these kids are competitors. You know, we lost some games in the summer that, you know, they took to heart. And, you know, normally your summer stuff, you're just out there, you're trying to play, you're just trying to get on the floor. You do want to compete and things, but I noticed something, you know, on teams that we didn't play well against, even if we won or if we lost against them, that they didn't like it. And I don't like it either. And so it's a good match. I'm glad, you know, I'm working with a program right now that these kids are hungry for wins. They're excited to be there, and I know they're going to give me everything. And the first thing I told them day one is, you'll get all of me if I can get all of you. And I think that's a fair trade, and they're going to get everything I have. All I ask in return is to get everything they have and walk away with no regrets when you know, the final whistle's blown at the end of their season. You know, I don't want them to say, well, if I'd have done this or if I'd have worked harder this day or this day. I want them to have no regrets when they step off the floor. And I think that's all you can ask as a high school coach, you know, that you prepare your team the best of your ability and they take what you give them and they do it to the best of their ability. So, you know, I'm excited. Seems like a long time, I'm being honest. I mean, with the COVID season, it just seems like it's just drug on and on and on. And I think we're all excited to get playing. I know it was a super great thing with the football season getting going. And obviously having a good football season at Emory over there really helps. And I want to congratulate those kids. And I want to congratulate the kids at Carbon as well for, you know, coming into a new program with a new coach and competing and doing what they're doing. And obviously the volleyball teams doing what they're doing. It's been awesome. You know, cross-country state championship for Emory. I mean, there's a lot of great things going on with our schools right now in our area here. And don't mean to leave Pinnacle or Green River or anybody else out, you know, with our community here. But it's exciting that the kids are getting a chance to play, and I hope that continues through the winter sports as well.
Coach, let's talk about tryouts because that is upon us. In fact, you guys will jump into tryouts in about 2 weeks. So you may have an idea of which kids are going to come out, but I'm sure there's always that chance, right? You're going to find a diamond in the rough, or you're going to find a kid that maybe couldn't commit to go into these camps in the off season. I mean, tryouts are kind of a venture into the unknown.
They are. And, you know, even with these open gyms, we've had some guys show up the last week or two that, you know, I hadn't seen in the summertime. We've also had some guys that were there in the summertime that I haven't seen the last couple weeks. And, you know, the one thing that I'm super excited about is even though we had football season going on, I had a ton of football players who were coming to open gyms, which is hard. You got schoolwork. You just get through a football practice. You're competing for a region title in football and then going to state. And these kids were still willing to come and give me 2 hours of basketball time, you know, on any given night. And so that's exciting for me. But, yeah, we've got a ton of kids that have been coming out for open gym. You know, some guys who haven't, you know, played at Emory in a few years that are back out trying to make the team. Again, you know, you don't know how many guys that you haven't seen all year that'll show up first day of tryouts. And, you know, with that, I want to remind, and I know I put a post out, but I want to remind any young man, you know, wanting to play basketball at Emory High, they need to be registered on Register My Athlete before tryouts start on November 9th. So, they need to get logged on to Register My Athlete, get all their information put in, and get that taken care of because that's throughout the state. You cannot try out at any given sport now if you're not registered on Register My Athlete. So, you know, some of these guys that maybe haven't tried out in a year or two and haven't been to open gym and haven't heard me, you know, going over this, they need to understand they've got to do that before they can try out. So, but it's exciting. Like I said, yeah, I'm always looking for diamonds in the rough. I mean, I've got a great younger group, a freshman group that, you know, has been playing very well with each other for a long time, going to a lot of stuff since they've, you know, been in elementary school and it pays off. And, you know, that group's going to get pushed and they're going to push our older guys. And that's how you get better. You push each other in practice every day. You compete every day because, you know, right now starting positions are up in the air. I mean, making the team is up in the air. There are no guaranteed spots when it comes to making a program. And, you know, I just want those kids to know they compete every day and they're gonna be rewarded by what they do in practice and everything else. So, but yeah, it's exciting.
It definitely is. I know, Coach, we can catch up again in a couple of weeks when you have your team set and we can start previewing the year. I'm looking forward to this time, best time of the year. And again, I appreciate you taking out the time to stop by today to give us an update on everything that's happening with the boys basketball program.
Yeah, it's exciting, Jordan. And I want to thank the people from Emory County who, you know, I've shown the support for me to come over and be their basketball coach. I know it's kind of odd. We've touched on this before, being the head baseball coach at Carbon High and the head basketball coach at Emory High. And, you know, everybody, you know, I get, you know, isn't that a conflict of interest? You know, how are you going to do that? How are the kids? How can you do? You know, for me, anyone who knows me and has been around me for the 30 years of my coaching, it's been a community thing for me. I've always been about our community. I mean, I grew up in Emory County. I played there. I love it there. I've been coaching at Carbon now. You know, my first stint at Carbon was in 1990 as an assistant baseball coach with Coach Pinedo. So that's 30 years ago. So, you know, my ties to this high school at Carbon are deep too. And so the community, we thrive off of each other. And I want, you know, I really appreciate the support from both communities about going and being a coach at both schools because ultimately, it just comes down to, you know, you're there for the kids. And, you know, it doesn't have really anything to do with what color jersey they put on for me. It's just about that individual and making them better and giving them an opportunity to move on after high school and succeed in whatever they want to do, whether it's, you know, sports or just their academics or whatever profession they choose. So, for me, it's exciting to be a part of both programs and the community. And, again, I want to say thank you to the support I've received and hopefully continue to get that support as we move forward, and it's exciting. Come out and watch some basketball. It's going to be a change, like we've talked about before. Coach Jeffs was there for a long time. I mean, dating back to when I was in school, and he, you know, he has quite a legacy and a program that he's built there. And you know, it's going to be tough to step in and fill those shoes, but I'm excited about doing that. And you know, I've had a lot of basketball experience being a head coach at East Carbon and Carbon myself, and I'm excited to bring my style to play there, and hopefully the kids are excited about it, and we'll get her going. 2 weeks is a short amount of time, and it'll be here again before we know it.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Again, Coach, thank you again for the time. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Jordan.
Again, Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Emory Spartan basketball team. We're going to break for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk more World Series. The Dodgers clinching last night against the Tampa Bay Rays in a 3-1 victory. We'll continue to recap what was a fantastic, entertaining World Series. More coming up right after this.
More Drive Time Sports on KOAM, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM.
That was Joe Buck's call last night as Julio Urias recorded the final out of the 2020 World Series for the first time in 32 years. The Los Angeles Dodgers, World Series champions. Every step of the way, we've talked to a couple of different people who have lent their expertise in Major League Baseball. Our next guest has joined us for the better part of 10 years now here on this show. I can't believe how fast time flies. And it seems like every year he was in the same boat as me, picking the Los Angeles Dodgers to win the World Series. And finally, it came to fruition. Joining us right now over the phone, we have Steve Bordstein. And Steve, it's a beautiful day. Not quite 24 hours since the Dodgers claimed their first championship since 1988, and it still feels nearly unreal. It doesn't feel real, does it?
Well, it doesn't feel real for a couple of reasons. Whether it's personal to you, as I know for both of us it is, or whether it's, you know, the hard-nosed cynic, the analytics guy, whatever type of fan you are of baseball, whatever type of fan you are of the Dodgers or the Rays or what have you, there's so many different storylines from this series. And I'll repeat what I said to you the other day. For those people who chose not to watch this World Series for whatever reason, shame on you, because game six, I mean, even, you know, go back to the loss in game four. All these things were just so amazing. And if you couldn't get fired up for this, then I don't have an answer for you. I don't have an explanation for you. I don't have an excuse for you. This was unbelievable in every way. And we were talking about this just before we started this interview here. Analytics finally worked for the Dodgers, you know? Analytics finally worked in a way that it didn't work against the Dodgers. And the Kevin Cash thing is going to be obviously the big story. It's the move to take out Blake Snell. But let's get to all those things here, because it's so fascinating how this worked out on last night.
No question. I mean, right out of the gate, Tampa Bay, they needed a shot in the arm in Game 6, and they get it from Arozarena, who's just been fantastic in this series. I mean, I had told you last night, you could still make the argument for Arozarena being the MVP of the series, even though Tampa Bay lost. He hits a home run off Tony Gonsolin right out of the gate. Tampa Bay has the momentum, but that was it. And really, when you look over the course of this entire game, they had one moment, one player in Randy Arozarena that could generate some sort of offense in this contest. The bullpen matchup worked once again for the Dodgers. So I guess when we talk about analytics finally working in LA's favor, yes, it blew up in the face of Tampa Bay, but in the same sense, if you look at Game 7 of the NLCS and you look at Game 6 of the World Series, Dave Roberts was able to use his bullpen to get victories. And Steve, I didn't think it was going to work in Game 7. I had my doubts. I had my doubts about Game 6. I thought the Dodgers were set up beautifully for what would be Game 7 tonight. Nonetheless, it worked. The bullpen method worked for Dave Roberts.
And I know there's going to be a ton of second-guessing on Rays manager Kevin Cash pulling Blake Snell when he did. And those are going to be some very valid criticisms. But I'll go back to a decision that he made 5, 6, 7 hours earlier. And that was the decision to change the top of the lineup there, putting G-Man Choi as your leadoff hitter when you clearly had some, you had some players that were in the early part of that lineup earlier on in this series to provide some offense. And to put Choi in that leadoff spot, to me, in a critical must-win game, that was, to me, I think, even before the Blake Snell disaster, that, to me, was a remarkably weird decision to make in a must-win game. So I'm curious how that's going to play out in days and years to come. But the Blake Snell thing is obviously going to be the major focal point, because the guy was just unhittable. I mean, just like he was back in game two, he was electric. And I get analytics. I get numbers. I understand all that. But the guy was on fire, and I can't imagine that he's not going to, Kevin Cash is not going to get compared to other gaffes made by managers in big situations like that. First one we talked about was the 2003 decision by Grady Little, the Red Sox, to leave Pedro Martinez, and who'd thrown 120 pitches and then just got torched by the New York Yankees.
Yeah, when you bring up Grady Little and Pedro Martinez, it gets a pass from me, and it's always gotten a pass from me, because you were riding with the arm of arguably the best pitcher in the game at that time. In my mind, Steve, you can always look back and say, well, he should have taken him out. I felt the same way about Clayton Kershaw during his so-called struggles in the postseason. You dance with who brought you. Okay, and in this case, you pulled your ace way too early. To me, it's on the opposite end of the spectrum. It's on the disappointing end of the spectrum. If Kevin Cash leaves Blake Snell in too late, I don't think we're talking about it today. I really don't.
I agree with that. I agree with that. And I think another question that's got to be brought up is, you know, all this talk that there was about this Rays bullpen being so remarkable. Like, they were fairly unremarkable. Even going back, you go back to the ALCS, all those, you know, home runs that were getting hit in the ALCS against the Astros, go back to the series against the Yankees. They were giving up home run after home run. I don't know where this narrative came from, but this was some unhittable bullpen, especially when you consider that in games four and five, when the Rays were going to their closer in the sixth and seventh innings. Like, some of the decisions that were made here are really going to be looked back on as questionable, I think. And I mean, obviously, it's easy to do that, A, in the aftermath. It's easy to do that now. And it's easier for us to do that as Dodgers fans, because naturally, the decisions worked out fairly well. But I still think you got to wonder what went into the mindset here. Look, analytics are great when they work, and they're terrible when they don't work. But you've got to be able to, you know, you talked about Grady Little getting a free pass, you know, because inevitably it didn't work, what have you. So, you know, some people are going to give more revisionist history to it. This, there's no revisionist history on this one. This was an epic fail.
Steve Bordstein, again, our guest right here, as we recap the 2020 World Series. The Dodgers last night taking care of the Tampa Bay Rays 3-1 to close out their first World Series championship in 32 years in six games. We'll talk about Corey Seager, who was the World Series MVP. And to me, it wasn't etched in stone that Corey Seager was going to be the MVP, because you had so many other major contributors for the Dodgers over this series. Don't get me wrong, I believe that Corey Seager was very well deserving of it. The kid hit 400 and had 5 RBIs over six games. He did something right at the plate. But when you look at other contributors, Clayton Kershaw wins not one but two games. And honestly, you probably need to look at Julio as well. As I had mentioned to you, he is this generation Fernando Valenzuela. That's the way Los Angeles is going to look at Julio, a kid that you and I have had many conversations about, Steve, over the past couple of years. Those were the three players. Mookie Betts was good. Mookie Betts was not amazing in the World Series. He had his struggles at the plate. In my mind, those were the three guys, and you could have given the World Series MVP to either of those three guys, and I couldn't have complained.
No, and I'll give credit to Seager, because other than a guy named Randy Arozarena, there wasn't a more important hitter in a lineup for a team in the postseason than Corey Seager. And how ironic it is that, you know, from the two spot, no less, because I think there's always that narrative of the cleanup hitter, the old school thought of, you know, oh, you get the first three guys on base. You know, that it just shows how strong that entire lineup was, because, you know, if Austin Barnes doesn't extend an inning, you don't get to Mookie Betts, then you don't get to Corey Seager. You know, there's so many things that had to happen along the way. You mentioned Clayton Kershaw, and I Look, I mean, I'm so glad that this enormous albatross that's been hanging around his neck for the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years is finally off his shoulders now. Because, you know, and it might be funny. It's funny to think, like, if he does come back in a starting rotation spot, which I'm sure he will next season, you know, how much more dominant can he be? Like, how much more dangerous does he become not having that weight around his neck anymore, that he doesn't have that postseason historic nightmare performance hanging over him anymore? And, you know, I think that you mentioned Kershaw. I think he would have been an amazing choice. But to Seager's credit, I mean, there's not a more important hitter in any lineup on any roster, you know, save for Aaron Judge, perhaps, for the Yankees, than Corey Seager was this postseason for the Dodgers.
Steve, as far as what's next for this Dodger team, I know they just won the World Series last night. It's hard to look at what's next, but that's the way this business works, especially in a season where we only got 60 games as far as the regular season is concerned. When you look at this Dodger team moving forward, in my mind, it's bad news for the Atlanta Braves. It's bad news for the San Diego Padres, who are going to be there, and they are going to be legitimate threats. There's no reason to not think that this Dodger team will not only be back next year, but be better next year when you look at some of the options and some of the rumors and some of the realistic possibilities, and knowing how aggressive Andrew Friedman really is. Look, this team is not going anywhere anytime soon. And when I say not anytime soon, I'm not talking 2-3 years. I'm talking the better part of a decade.
You think about, you know, David Price, one of the offseason acquisitions as part of the Mookie Betts deal, and he opted out. Okay, so he's a starting pitcher who will, you know, he's a guy who hasn't pitched. By the time we get to next March, April, he'll be a guy who hasn't pitched in 18 months, 20, you know, more than a year and a half. So you think about, okay, you know, it's not Tommy John surgery related either. It's, you know, it's just him resting. So if he comes back in good form, okay, you mentioned the rumors. All right, so one of the big rumors is, and it's not really much of a rumor, Trevor Bauer wants out of Cincinnati. Trevor Bauer's made it very clear he'd like to be in Los Angeles. So think about a rotation, Jordan, that now goes Bueller, Bauer, Kershaw. Let's throw May, let's throw Price, let's throw Urias into that rotation. And then the majority of that lineup, let's say they have to lose one or two guys along the way here. Good luck, San Diego. Good luck, Atlanta. Beat those pitchers five nights in a row.
I agree. The Dodgers have one of the most brilliant front office minds, and it's funny to see the expansion on what's been laid before. Because when I look at Andrew Friedman, and I don't think you can oversell anything that this guy has accomplished, not only with the Dodgers, but even when he was with Tampa, it just seems like it's an extension of what Theo Epstein rolled with in Boston and then turned that into a different method in Chicago. When I see Andrew Friedman and I'm watching him celebrate this World Series, and you look back at the moves that he has made to put the Dodgers in a position to succeed for this long, am I crazy for kind of relating him to Theo Epstein and the success we saw from Theo over the course of 10 to 15 years?
No, I don't think it's crazy at all. I mean, I think when you look at the work that was done to put this roster together, and then, you know, and I know there's going to be that narrative, and you and I talked about it, I think, a few weeks ago, that, oh, well, this season is so different, there's going to be an asterisk next to it. Fine, put an asterisk next to it. I want you to. If you're a fan, you want to put an asterisk next to this because this was an odd season, please, by all means, while you're at it, put big yellow highlight marks around it. Put it all in boldface, all caps, with all sorts of highlights around it. Just so long as it says World Champions. Because what this team did, think about what this team did, not just in the postseason, not just rallying from down 3-1 in the NLCS, not just overcoming the complete craziness of game 4. This Dodgers team lost one series all year. They lost one series. That is impossible to imagine. A team with all the chaos and all the no fans and everything that went into play here, this team lost one series all season long. and are now world champions. So there's not a single person, up or down, front office, managers, coaches, benches, players, et cetera, who didn't play a part in this. So that staff has every reason to be considered the favorites for 2021.
Steve Bordstein, the time finally came. I can't believe it. The Dodgers are World Series champions. There's nobody else I'd rather share the airwaves with today. I appreciate you taking out the time to talk about this event that I honestly wondered if I would ever see it. I know you've got to see one. We've talked about this time and time again. We got to see it last night. The Dodgers, they're World Series champions.
11,696 days since October 20th, 1988, and it's been a long year, 12,000 days, but we finally got it done. Did you give your dad a hug when it was over?
Absolutely, absolutely. Biggest hug I've ever given him.
That's awesome. Congratulations to the Dodgers, and now let's do it again in 21.
No question, no question. Steve Bordstein, again, thank you so much for taking out the time to join us.
Looking forward to talking soon. Thank you, my friend.
We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Back on Drive Time Sports. Put the final touches on this edition of the show. Let's close out with more baseball talk. Travis, the playoffs come to an end, and last night there was the report that Justin Turner tested positive for COVID-19, had to be pulled out of the game, so the Dodgers finished with Edwin Rios at third base. But for the most part, everything worked as far as the Major League Baseball playoffs are concerned. They extended it to 16 teams. I didn't like it. I didn't like having eight teams. I thought that it took away a little of incentive to win your league outright. Not much of a home field advantage. You got to go up against an 8 seed. At the end of the day, it played out correctly. I mean, in the National League, we had seeds 1 and 2 for the NLCS. We had 1 and 6 in the AL, but number 1 came out. And so we had 1 versus 1. We had the two best teams from each league going toe-to-toe for the World Series. All in all, I guess it worked.
They were the two best teams all year. And moving forward, you're not going to get 16 teams. Manfred already said that. Probably have, what, 14? That's all right, I guess.
Yeah, look, I
14's
think,
fine.
I think moving forward, yeah, I'm fine with that.
16's too many.
And the way you have 14 is similar to the way the NFL does it. You give number one a bye.
And that's fair.
And that's fair. I mean, it gives you something to play for. Look, they could decrease it even further.
Because 162 games is going to separate himself, and those teams are going to separate themselves from, you know, from being good and from being bad, and 14's a good number.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Now that the NBA and Major League Baseball are complete, who did it better, and which playoff did you enjoy more?
I'm going to say the NBA probably did it better, because I liked the bubble first, that they went through that, and there was no one who came out positive player-wise. Major League Baseball, I thought, could have played more games. I think they dragged their feet a little too long trying to get everything set up. I think that part kind of irritated me more, because there was talk that they might play 30 games, then it went to 40, and then it was stuck on 60. But I thought Major League Baseball had a chance to play more games.
Okay, playoff-wise, what did you enjoy more?
NBA.
See, I got to go baseball, and I'm not just saying that because the Dodgers
won.
And
I'm probably saying
that because
the Lakers won, and the Reds were so disappointing.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it from a pure
But it felt normal.
It felt normal. Look, Major League Baseball felt normal.
Yeah,
the NBA did not feel normal.
NBA didn't, but Major League Baseball felt like it was a normal, you know, season of playoff baseball.
You know, when we did get fans, I think there was, what, 12,000 fans, if I'm not mistaken, at the game last night. You didn't have that in the NBA. Now, look, Adam Silver did a terrific job, and if you want to talk about any of the commissioners that handle the COVID situation correctly or the best, there's no doubt that's Silver.
Yeah, that plan he put together from way back in March to that point,
It was flawless. It worked. But from an enjoyment standpoint, I think baseball did very well, all things considered. Look, both were a success. We got a 2020 champion in both sports.
Man, hockey did a good job,
hockey
too.
Hockey did a great job. Yeah, Bettman, you got to give him credit as well. We got a champion in 2020. I mean, we were sitting back here in March wondering, what are we going to talk about on Drive Time Sports what's going to happen to the 2020 seasons. There's going to be no champions. And we got a champion in all three of those sports, and the NFL is doing just fine at the moment.
Yeah.
The professional sports in this country, they have figured it out. Out of time of this edition of the show, I got to thank Steve Bordstein for taking out the time to join us. Coach Jeff Cincinnatus as well of the Emory Sport and Basketball team gearing up for the winter season. That's coming up tomorrow. I'm not going to be in the studio. We will have a best of edition of Drive Time Sports coming your way. Looking forward to it. Should be a fun one. We caught up with Billy Ripken earlier this year. You remember that interview?
I do. I like Billy Ripken. Yeah, he does a good job on MLBT, yeah.
Yeah, you're a Billy Ripken guy, so I know you remember that. If you missed it, we talked about his books, Analytics in Baseball. That'll be a fun segment to revisit. And we're also going to replay an interview that I did with Jerry Tarkanian's son, Danny Tarkanian. I thought that was interesting as well. A book about his dad is what we were talking about. Some interesting tidbits, including how Jerry Tarkanian nearly became the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. The everything that went down at UNLV, it's just fascinating all the way around. So I think you'll enjoy the best of show tomorrow. I'll be back with you on Friday. Be safe. We're out.